Good evening, everyone. Ooh, there we are. Here I am. Thanks to everybody for coming out tonight. We're going to have a great time and learn lots. So let's really be open. And we're welcoming Rachel Wilson tonight. She's from Eastbourne and met Helena a couple of years ago down in Brighton with the City Light project. So we're really looking forward tonight. We're going to be looking at befriending and boundaries. So just give a really warm welcome to Rachel.
So I'll just turn this around. Thank you so much for having me. It's really nice to be here. I met Helena a couple of years ago, just like Anne was saying, at the City Light project. And I don't know how many of you are aware of what's going on in Brighton Hove, but that's a similar project working with people looking to exit the sex industry, whether or not they've been trafficked or just been in prostitution for a number of years. Just to give you a little bit of background as to who I am and where I've come from. I've always grown up in Eastbourne and part of the New Frontiers Church in Eastbourne, King's Church there. And really, God gave me a heart for the poor, really, in my early teens. And I think I read the Bible and it didn't really stick out to me. I'd been raised in a Christian family and then read Isaiah 61 about the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon you. And it was like it was just highlighted. And God just really gave me a heart for the poor. And so that was quite exciting. So I went through my teens involved with various ministries and things in Eastbourne. But then decided, once it came to choosing a university course, decided to do international relations and development studies at Sussex Uni. And as in my second year, had the privilege of working with International Justice Mission. I wonder how many of you are aware of International Justice Mission or IJM or what they do? I'd really recommend finding out more, because if you've got a heart for the poor, and particularly a heart for trafficking, those exiting the trafficking industry, IJM is absolutely at the cutting edge of what they're doing, and they're unashamedly Christian and fantastic leadership from the top. They work in India, the Philippines, Latin America, all over really, and they bring court cases, they assist police in doing brothel raids, and they're really absolutely fantastic organisation. I'll recommend some books later, but their leader, Gary Haugen's written some excellent stuff if you want to read a bit more as well. After working with IJM, I did went back to uni and did what every arts graduate does when they graduate and think, what on earth do I do next? But since leaving, just worked for a couple of charities, and that's where I've been involved in setting up befriending schemes. So initially with Care for the Carers and working with isolated rural carers, setting up a befriending and mentoring scheme and then training the volunteers to go out and befriend these isolated carers. Then with a hospice as well, working with volunteers and setting up various projects there. When I've done this training in the past, it tended to be for charities who are getting outside funding, which I'm aware that you're not getting outside funding at the moment, which has got real pros and cons, actually. But in terms of boundaries, really, what I'm going to say today is hopefully going to be a good conversation starter. And it'll be something for you to go back to your leaders with and for you to chat about how you establish boundaries within this project and things, because that's absolutely up to them. And I'd hate to tread on any toes or anything. Anything I say today is just suggestions. And hopefully I can say something helpful for you to take home. Is it all right if we just pray just before we start? We've probably all come. I've come from busy dinner times and bath times and stuff with little children. I've got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And I'll tell you a bit more about them later on. But let's pray. God, you just know everywhere we're coming from. You know our houses, you know our homes, you know our families. And God, we just put aside this hour and a half. And Father, I pray you would give me the ability to speak clearly and make me a blessing to these people who are wanting to serve you and to serve vulnerable people, and to see changes in their life, Lord God. Father, I just ask, just give us open hearts and sensitivity to your Holy Spirit this evening. God, we just give this evening to you. Let's pray, be with us. Amen. So I've got a handout that I'm going to give you in a little while, but I'm not going to give it at the beginning, because if you're anything like me, when you get a handout, you then skip to the last page. And so I'm going to keep you concentrating at the beginning, and later on I'm just going to do some group work and things. So just stick with me through the talky bit. First of all, really, boundaries as a subject in general. Physical boundaries in our lives are very easy to see, aren't they? We have fences around our gardens, and we know exactly where the mess is our responsibility and where the mess is not our responsibility. And we've all got private property, and we understand. It's very clear and physical where those boundaries are. And obviously we have boundaries in our relationships and in everyday life as well. And usually they're unspoken. Sometimes in projects like these, they need to become spoken, because unspoken rules don't necessarily apply. They become the rules by which we judge our life. So we might hug a friend, we're unlikely to hug a boss, whereas it might be fine for your discipler to ask you about how you're dealing with sexual temptation, your mother-in-law would be slightly inappropriate. All of those things are unspoken boundaries, but we all know the rules. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we operate by healthy boundaries in our lives. Sometimes we can have very unhealthy relationships with our mother-in-laws or our husbands or wives, where things can become quite entrenched and negative. But over time, they start to feel natural. And actually, they can start to feel natural or right to us, partly because we're shaped by our culture and the way we were raised, our parenting, our spiritual beliefs, and also by our past hurts. So things that have happened to hurt us will shape the way we then deal with boundaries in terms of talking to other people, how much we open up about, how much we expect of other people, how much we ask of them. And I don't know about you, but usually we don't even notice that we operate by boundaries at all until someone crosses them. And suddenly you feel really uncomfortable. And I don't know if you've ever, I'm sure you have encountered people who stand that little bit too close, and you end up backing away until you're kind of in a corner and you feel like your boundaries have been somehow compromised. Or it might be someone asking a question where you think, you really don't know me well enough to ask me that question, or I'm very uncomfortable in opening up to you about this. They're the kind of unspoken rules that we operate by. And particularly as we spend, begin to spend time with people who are more and more like us, the more and more comfortable that can become, or the more and more natural boundaries can become. And it's only when we spend time with people who maybe aren't like us, have completely different spiritual beliefs or past hurts that are shaping them, different parenting, that suddenly those boundaries we can seem very aware of. Usually conversation just flows and we know the rules, but sometimes when we don't know the rules, it's very unnerving. I don't know if you've ever spent time with someone who's extraordinarily wealthy or well brought up or something, and suddenly you don't actually feel like you know the rules. You're not sure how much you should insist upon helping, for example. It's the same sorts of things that we come across if you do cross-cultural training and you're working in other cultures. And it can be really unnerving when you don't understand the rules. So just a little illustration. My little boy is 3 and he's on the autistic spectrum. And so he really isn't sure of the rules a lot of the time. And so we were in Starbucks earlier this week, and a lovely young woman just smiled at him just because he's very sweet and he was by the counter. And he just walked straight up to her, got her right in her face and said, laughing, laughing, just because she was smiling. He's trying to get the hang of what laughing is and what it means and when someone's doing it, when someone's not doing it. And so to him, all this whole world of social rules and boundaries is something that has to be learned, and it doesn't come very naturally to him. And he's quite a good example to me of much those boundaries are actually important as to the way we lead our lives and build relationships as well. Just at this point, if I just mention this book, because if you're interested in general in the topic of boundaries, this is an excellent book, Boundaries, Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend. And that's really excellent, not so much about ministry, but more about our day-to-day boundaries. And if, as we're talking today, you feel like there are some boundary issues just in your everyday general relationships, then this is an excellent, really biblical book you can go to as well. So boundaries can become particularly unclear when we're working with vulnerable people in a ministry setting, because you have responsibilities to yourself, but you also have responsibilities to that person who might be very needy. And you also have a third set of responsibilities to the ministry or the charity that you're working for. Because when you're going out, you're not just holding your own reputation, you're actually going out wearing the reputation of the people that have sent you and are, to some extent, taking accountability as well. So it can be quite a complicated set of boundaries that are in place when we're working with vulnerable people in a ministry setting. Just, I think, to talk very briefly about the biblical basis for boundaries, just because something that, particularly when I was at IJM, it was really interesting observing the way that people, particularly the investigators, and the way they operated their boundary system, because their job was to go into brothels and to pose as people wanting to pay for sex. So first of all, that's psychologically, that's going to have some serious boundary issues for you. They're going in with hidden cameras offering this, and then the aim was they came away, once the evidence was there, that was clearly children on offer, they could go back in with a police team. The trouble was for them as well that it didn't always get to that point. If there wasn't enough evidence, then not necessarily the police were going to act. If it was a local and corrupt police force as well, not necessarily going to act. And they've got all this stuff going around in their head. And they've had to work quite hard at IJM at having kind of psychosocial stuff in place, really, to support people. And with all of this, I just can't emphasise enough how much you need to have transparency with the person who's overseeing you, and to be talking to someone about maybe things you're hearing that are becoming difficult, because otherwise it's not long and it doesn't take much for your boundaries to be kind of transgressed in a way you haven't understood, where suddenly you're dreaming about the person that you're actually working with in a ministry setting, and they've had to be really careful about putting boundaries in place. But I think a mantra that they use that is really helpful is, before taking something on, whether it's a befriending partnership or anything really in ministry or in life, ask yourself the question, can I do this, A, joyfully, and B, sustainably? And just have that as your matrix by which you're making the decisions of what you do within ministry. Can I do this joyfully, and can I do this sustainably? Because good boundaries are biblical, because they help you run the race with perseverance and for the long haul, the marathon, not the sprint. And they help you serve God with a happy heart rather than a begrudging heart. And just joyfully and sustainably. So just continually asking yourself that question. I think before I got involved with befriending schemes, and particularly in situations like this, I tended to think boundaries was a little bit of a health and safety tick box type thing, where you kind of think, oh, okay, it's the same kind of risk assessment type culture. And I also saw it as quite divorced from what the Bible taught. I would be thinking about, but what about verses like rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep? And I would hate for you to go away and to stop you rejoicing with those who rejoice and weeping with those who weep. Because I think we can go too far with this. But there's a really helpful passage, which I just wanted us to look at really briefly. Don't worry if you haven't got your Bibles. But it's in Galatians 2:2, and it gives a really good basis for how we work with vulnerable people with boundaries. So, just like a few minutes, Galatians 2:2, and the verse says, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. So it's saying, take on each other's burdens. That's actively telling us to share in the problems of other people. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbour. For each one will have to bear his own load. And when you read that, you can think, that sounds quite contradictory, because at the beginning of the passage, it's saying, bear one another's burdens. And by the time it gets to the end, it's saying, for each one will have to bear his own load, as if it's contradicting exactly what it's just said. So I'm just going to need a volunteer to help illustrate the difference between bearing one another's burdens and bearing your own load. Who would like to volunteer? Yes. Fantastic. You haven't got a bad back or anything. Not that this is particularly heavy. First of all, I'm going to get you to put this on. Right. On your back, lovely. Oh, you've got no problems then. Right. And some more. There we go. Let's give you some bags. Sorry, what's your name?
Lara.
Lara. So Lara's got a lot on her plate. She's got twins for one. But she's not only carrying a lot of stuff on her back, she's got extra bags, all extra past hurts, all the extra baggage we get, bad relationships, bad decision making, things that have happened to her out of no will or any problem of her own, just stuff that's actually happened to her. And so as well as carrying responsibility for her own life, she is carrying a lot of extra baggage. And the whole point of befriending is the beginning of that verse, carry one another's burdens. Because I can come along and say, actually, I could take a little bit of that stuff for you. I could help you with that. I could help you maybe get yourself onto a uni course if that's what your goal is. I could be a listening ear and give you some emotional support, and we could sit in and you could feel like you could trust me and open up to me. So I can take that. And just there, we can maybe... I could go along to that social services meeting with you, or something, just so you've got someone there with you and you feel like you're not alone in it. Okay, so I'm bearing her burdens. Okay, so I'm able to take a little bit off her plate and we can walk through this together. And this difficult phase in her life, we can do it together. What I can't do is take that, because that's what I carry my baby in. And that's actually my responsibility. That's my load. And as soon as Lara asks me to take on responsibility for maybe for decision making or for the way in which her life is going to go in this, for the general direction, for the just responsibility, and for having to be there for absolutely everything, for that boundary, at that point I have to say no, because that's your load. You bear your own load. I will help you carry your burdens, but I can't take that off you. And actually, God doesn't want me to take that off you either. I would be disempowering you, and I'd be taking away your dignity in some ways, in actual fact, to actually say, I'm going to carry that responsibility for your life now. So I think I hope that's a helpful illustration. Just as, and of course, it's all shades of grey, isn't it? Because then the question is, where do you draw the line? But I think that's a helpful principle to start thinking about boundaries and befriending from. So. Thank you very much. Right, so we can help people carry their extras, but ultimately we all carry responsibility for our own lives, the way we're going to go, we're choosing to go. So boundaries help us distinguish what we can help people with and what is their own responsibility, what is their load. Okay, in a minute we're just going to move on to talk about befriending with a capital B. But in the meantime, I'm just going to hand out some handouts, and perhaps you could just turn to the person on your right or your left and say one thing that's stuck out to you so far. Just while I do our handouts.
Yes, of course, no. I'll do it.
Sorry, a bit of correction to the handout. It's Galatians 6:2. I got all panicked and thought it wasn't in there. But it's okay, if we move on just to speaking about befriending in general. And I'd call it really befriending with a capital B, because it's become quite fashionable, really, in recent years for all sorts of projects to run befriending schemes. And it might not be befriending with a small B that we're aware of, where you meet another mum in the playground and you befriend them. Befriending schemes with a capital B are usually more formal than that. So the fancy word for it is a service provider, but it might be that Mencap, for example, would run a befriending scheme, and it means that they are the kind of intermediary. So they're the person who's the means by which you meet that person. So that person is introduced to you in a formal way, rather than someone you just bump into in a street and develop a more natural, organic friendship with. So I hope you got the definition there in your handout. So befriending is defined as a voluntary, mutually beneficial and purposeful relationship in which an individual gives time to support another to enable them to make changes in their life. And I think that's actually quite a good definition. What I'd kind of recommend to you guys as you're coming through this, really, is to look at the various like nuances to that definition, and you might want to come up with something that's more specific to what you're doing. The things I've put underneath are little extras that I think are quite helpful to add in. So like I mentioned, the service provider's involvement. I think that's important because it does change the dynamic of a relationship when you've been introduced to them in that kind of setting. It can be quite a humbling thing, actually, for somebody to have a befriender. Kind of. I think you might find that a humbling thing to feel like you needed that. Like maybe you didn't have family around you or friends around you. That can be quite a difficult thing. I do think it's a useful word still. It's particularly for establishing boundaries from the beginning. The other thing I think we'd add as well is goals. When you're beginning to develop befriending relationships, it's really helpful to talk about goals early on, particularly if it's the third one, if it's time limited. If it's time limited, then in some ways for that person as well, for it to be a success story, it's important that goals, however small, are achieved. And when I've done this in the past, those goals would be, for example, we had one carer who her goal was to have the confidence to drive into town. Had another one who was about public transport, having the confidence to go on public transport. And so the whole aim of the befriender in those cases was to be building up towards that, because the second lady was agoraphobic as well. So it would be about the carer. Initially, we'd go to the bus stop, they'd rehearse what was going to happen. The next week, they'd meet up, they might go on the bus together somewhere. That might happen for 3 weeks. The next time, it might be that they're on the bus and the carer's following in the car, and then they have a coffee at the other end and drive back. And it's all about working towards what can seem like quite a small goal, but it's obviously very life-inhibiting to that person. I think, yeah, establishing goals can be important. Another way of doing it, we did a relationship map where we asked the person what their contacts were like, whether it was, if we say family and friends here, professionals here, and community, local community here. And we'd ask them to map where their current contacts were. And there might be that they had lots of contacts here. They were in contact with everyone from social services. They were really linked in with professionals, but they didn't know anybody in their local community. So in that kind of thing, we'd think about whether or not we got involved with a local group, whether it was a local hobby group, or if it was friends and family, we'd talk about doing an activity together, maybe going to an exercise class or something, with the aim of meeting other people. And I think that's one thing about befriending that we'll talk about later, but is really helpful to think about making yourself completely dispensable. So the aim is not for you to be the one and only person in that person's life and for them to become completely reliant upon you. That would be really counterproductive, and it might also imitate the boundaries they've had in previous relationships, and those boundaries become further entrenched. We get bad habits, really. What the aim is that you then introduce them to a new community, and that sometimes happens quickly and sometimes it doesn't. But you introducing them, whether it's to a church coffee morning or going along to that exercise class or doing just one of those things, maybe going along to an evening course with them, that kind of thing. The aim is to broaden the world, though, not to limit it just to you. As I mentioned, sometimes it's time limited, and that's something you really have to establish with the people who are leading the project, and also with the kind of partnership in question. It might be that for one person you think it's really important that we limit this to 9 months, because if we don't, we can't avoid reliance. That's the sense you're getting early on. With another person, you might think it will really damage them if we limit this to 9 months, because it's just that's just not what they need at the moment. But I think having some sort of time limitation is helpful, even if you then break that. And that's the thing with boundaries, isn't it? That to have a time limitation and then to go beyond it isn't as difficult as to have no time limitation and then suddenly to enforce one. It's very easy to broaden boundaries. It's much more difficult to make them tighter once you've started. I think befriending is a really strange third category for boundary setting as well, because it's not professional. The whole aim of it is you're not going to be like that person's social worker, or you're not going to be that needing to be that removed. You're meant to be more involved, and the aims are more to do with building self-esteem and building self-confidence over time. So hopefully you're going to have more time with that person than their social worker would as well. But it's also not friendship, and I think that's a really hard one to get early on, but it's really important. It's not friendship because you haven't met in that ordinary, natural way. You know stuff about their past they probably don't know about yours, so you're coming into it at an unusual angle. It's possible that they are not the kind of person you would tend to develop a relationship with either. Maybe not the kind of person you would tend to bump into. So you're both having to work a bit harder. It's also not completely private because that person needs to know that you have a duty and a responsibility to feed back anything that's going to be important, really, in terms of protecting vulnerable adults. So that needs to be very clear from the beginning. It's not everlasting, and there are goals involved, which is different to a normal friendship as well. So that's why I think actually the term befriending is helpful, because I think it's good to distinguish early on with that person and to be really clear as well. Having said all that, I hope that doesn't make it sound too distant, because it is a purposeful relationship and it's a real relationship, and they hopefully need to feel really valued by the fact that you are giving your time for free and that you want to be there as well. That's really important that they understand that. What I'd like to do is, on your handout, it should say about what are the consequences of, over on one page, what are the consequences of overlax boundaries in befriending partnerships? And on the other page, what are the consequences of over rigid boundaries in befriending partnerships? And that's, I'm asking that for both the befriender and for the client. I don't know if that's the word you've used so far. That's the word I've used before with other organisations, but whatever the equivalent is here. But I wonder if this side of the room, so everyone from that aisle there, if you could just work in groups of twos and threes and answer about the question about if boundaries are over rigid, what are the consequences for the befriender and for the client if you come into it with really tight boundaries where they're saying, so how was your day? And you're saying, can't tell you about that. Sorry, that's not for me to talk about. So what are the consequences there? And then if you guys could do, what are the consequences of overlax boundaries, just working in twos and threes, and then we'll come back together and feedback. Is that all right? Right, if we just begin to come back together. It's overly relaxed on.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we get some feedback from this side first, what do over-relaxed boundaries result in? What do they result in for the befriender, first of all? Anything from your bit? Yeah, exhaustion. Yeah. Sorry, entering the professional. Yeah. Absolutely. So on this side, if you... over there, for the befriender, you could have exhaustion or really early burnout as well, which is not what you want. But also, that area of your involvement, then entering dinner time with the kids or date night with your husband, or do you know what I mean? It begins to have an impact upon everything, and it's basically filling your head. So filling your head at times when you didn't really make that commitment to take quite on that amount of responsibility. Anything else about the befriender over here? Sorry? So they begin to feel manipulated, and maybe, oh yeah, are being manipulated by the other person. That also, what can that lead to in terms of a feeling? Yeah, depression, and also, so you're just feeling depressed about, and a sense of devalue about what you're doing as well. So you start to lose heart about what you're doing, I think. So it becomes a less valuable volunteering role. But also you can begin to feel quite resentful towards that person as well. And I don't know if you've ever had that. Sometimes it doesn't need that person to have done anything. They might not realise they've done anything as well. It might be that in operating in ways that they previously have, and without realizing, they've managed to fill your time, whether it's, like I was saying, like bath time with the kids, date night with the husband, it starts to get filled. That's not necessarily their deliberate fault, but you almost start having those imaginary conversations during that time and can actually grow quite resentful of that person, as if they've done something quite harmful. And sometimes it's just because they're in your head and you don't want them to be there. And the situation can escalate. It's kind of that similar situation to where you have an argument with someone and you walk away and you think, I should have said this, and you kind of relive, and then they'll say this, and I'll say this, and they'll say this. And it kind of, you then grow increasingly angry with that person about things they haven't actually said. It's just that you're having a conversation in your head in which they imagine themselves are speaking. That might just be me. anything else for the befriender on that side? Overwhelmed, yeah. And maybe feeling like they've got to solve it as well. Sometimes, particularly when you're dealing with working with vulnerable people, the situations can seem very urgent when sometimes they're not urgent, because sometimes people do live their life in a whirlwind. And there can be a sense of, I have to resolve this tonight, before 6 o'clock, before I've spoken to anybody else or got any advice, because this is so urgent. And I'm saying that carefully, because sometimes obviously things are very, very urgent. But other times it can be that sense of having to make a rush decision is sometimes a false urgency. And I think I would question any decision that you have to make on your own in this sort of setting. There should always be time really for a phone call and say, let me get a second opinion on this. Let me come back to you. If you're unsure, of just constantly feeding back. And with the client, what do overlap boundaries result in for the client? Anyone from that group at the back there? Yeah, it could become expectant. Sorry? Very familiar. Over familiar. Dependency is the biggest, I would say the biggest thing for the client as well. An over dependency. They could be really confused, especially if all this is happening. Because if you actually think, especially if you burn out, and you think, I can't do this anymore, they're left in a state of real confusion as to what did I do wrong sometimes. And it can sometimes just be that our boundaries haven't necessarily been in the right places, not that they've done anything deliberately wrong. Anything else for that side? Oh, sorry? Yeah, disappointment for the client. Yeah, and really it's disappointment for both as well, isn't it? Because both feel like they haven't quite worked out like they'd hoped. Okay. That's brilliant. That's a really helpful. I hope that's helpful just to look at as well, to get an idea of why we establish our boundaries where we do. If we go to the other extreme though, we're to kind of a Victorian upper lip type befriending partnership, what do over rigid boundaries result in for the befriender? Sorry? Yeah, lack of trust. Yeah, lack of trust, frustration, and often an early end as well, won't it? Because ultimately that's going to lead to an early end to a befriending partnership. Because if both of you are unhappy, it's unlikely to go on for any period of time. Having said that, I would say befriending really does depend on chemistry as well. So if you are in a befriending partnership that does come to an early end, I really wouldn't do too much over-analysis, because sometimes you just don't click with that person. They know it, you know it, and you just need to try something else. What else for the befriender? Yeah. Yeah, so a fixation on rules. And you're constantly second guessing yourself. And when that happens, there's no natural flow to conversation either, is there? Because you're kind of going, okay. Yeah. Yeah, and I think as well that there's not much valuing in that. So you don't seem to value what you're doing and giving. How about on the client side? Yeah, really hard to open up and be vulnerable. Yeah, so this kind of lack of trust. is really significant. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I see what you mean. No. That's fine. Yeah, and it could feel reminiscent for them of previous relationships that have been like that as well, where there's very distant, rules keeping and suspicion. What you don't want to make that person feel, obviously, is that they're under suspicion, really, that they're someone who, they're a kind of suspected boundary transgressor, and it's really important that kind of impression isn't given as well, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so and I think that's one of the biggest ones, that the client would feel like they were being judged as well. It's also, like I said before, it's quite a humbling thing for them to come into in the first place. First of all, accepting the word befriender, that there's somebody who's coming alongside them, maybe because there's other people missing in their lives or in this part of their life. Really, you want to give that person as much dignity as you possibly can during that first befriending meeting, because you really want to be able to build them up as well from a position of real humility, where they're having to come in and say, yeah, I need help, you're here to help me. That's quite a hard thing for people to do as well. And I think making that initial connection is really important. What I've done here, I don't know, in a little while, it might be helpful for you to have a look along. I've just given some examples, because some of this can seem really conceptual and hard to actually pin down. But with boundaries, it really is whether or not you exchange telephone numbers, whether or not you have that person to your house, whether you go to their house, that sort of thing. Where do you meet? Do you tell anyone else you're meeting when you're meeting? It's all things like that. So I've just put down some examples of decisions that are very easy to make in a normal friendship relationship, but that can be more challenging to make in a befriending partnership. And when I've done it in the past, I've always got people to put them up on a board and go, yes, no, yes, no. And actually, I don't think that's a really helpful way of looking at it. I think all of them are really, it depends on the context, and it totally depends on the transparency you have with the person who's overseeing you. In a minute, we're going to do a case study of where it all kind of breaks down, and there's a lack of transparency, lack of communication with the person who's overseeing. But I think that really is the key to all of these things. And also, like I said earlier, the thing of saying, it's very easy to say, well, can I just take a minute to think about it? I just need to check. Make the organisation the bad guy sometimes. That's what I always used to tell my volunteers, is make us the bad guy. Say, I have to double check that, because I'm not allowed to just do things on my own. I must just go and check, or unfortunately they don't let me do that. I think sometimes if that's what keeps the relationship going, having that full guy, having that person in the background is actually quite helpful sometimes, that you are working for someone else. You're not a lone ranger who's allowed just to go off and do whatever. Okay. Finally, what do good boundaries result in for the befriender and the client? What is the aim here? What's the kind of the goal for you? What do you want to go away feeling really at the end of these befriending partnerships? Yeah, I think that's a really good goal. Because if you can do that, if you can have really good boundaries in place, you're modelling something for the future for them. So good relationship modelling, healthy relationships. Yeah, so a build-up of trust between the two of you. Yeah, so on their side, you want them to go away feeling empowered. Like they've been... you've actually added to their stature rather than taking away from it. You've given them dignity, you've empowered them. They want to feel maybe more confident as well to go out and meet new people, do new things, overcome fears. I think as well, for befrienders at the end of it, you want to feel like you've made a difference, don't you? You want to feel like, because I did this, and because God's been with me, I've made a difference in someone's life. And I think as well, just what I said earlier about a new community has been opened up to that person. So it's not just you, that maybe you've been able to introduce them to a new setting, new opportunities, a new community that will carry on longer than you're going to be there. So that it's got a bit of heritage really in it, that when you go, the whole thing's not going to fall apart. And I think that's also a really, that's a quite helpful thing to be thinking about with boundaries and befriending, is if I get sick, if I get hit by a bus today, am I leaving this person better off or worse off? Because if they become completely reliant on you to always give them their lift for their weekly shop and always be there every time they break up with a boyfriend or you're their late night phone call, then if you get hit by a bus, then you're going to leave them in a lesser situation than they were at the beginning. So everything you're doing is meant to be kind of proactive and not building reliance, but just helping them to grow in confidence and self-esteem. Okay. I hope that's helpful. I think in some ways the most helpful thing is actually to look at the case study that's in there. And this is a true case study. In fact, I need a handout because I can give you some more details. You can ask any questions you want. Thank you. So I'll just give you a minute to read it and then we'll go through it. Okay. Have you got any questions about the situation before we go into looking at it? Any further detail? Yes. Yes. Yeah, mum's around. Yes, but they were in quite an awkward position by that point because it was about confirmation rather than an open-ended question. To some extent, they were quite cornered. And by the point that the phone call was made, things had already started to be put into action. So I think, my second... In fact, it doesn't say it here. In fact, the conversation with the ministry leader only happened once Zara was back at Kate's house. So she was already there. They were cooking dinner. And then the phone call, because they hadn't managed to get through, then the phone call came through to say, was this going to be okay? But by this point, Zara's there. She's in the sitting room. Yeah. Okay. What would be great? Yeah. No, not in this particular situation. But what do you mean with the family? Yes, yeah, absolutely, yeah. What would be good to do, I think, is if you can just work in twos and threes, can you all look at questions one and two? And then I think if we go through three, four and five together, is that okay? So I'll give you about 5-10 minutes to look into. Is that all right? Should we come back together? Hope you enjoyed having a look at that. There's quite a lot of stuff in here, isn't there? Looking at the possible consequences for Kate, first of all. So she's a committed volunteer. She's been involved with the family for quite a long time. And she's ended up in this situation. What are the possible consequences for her? What do you have? Over on this side first. Yeah, and I think that's a really key point, the fact that it's a student house, because it obviously doesn't say here anything about making a phone call to the three other housemates to say, how do you feel about this? And I didn't put this in here, but she also gave her a key once she was in. So... just, I think, only once, only briefly, the idea was, I think she had to pop out and come back after half an hour or something. But a load of safety issues there, really. And quite a volatile individual in some ways as well, just because of the drug background. And not just the drug background, but the contacts that she had as well. But yeah, I think safety is a real issue there. What other consequences did you come up with? Oh, sorry, I'm putting you on the spot. Yeah. And I think once you've got people out of the situation, what's going to happen the next day as well is a really big thing, because there's quite a sense of urgency to the situation. This has to be resolved right now. It's a Friday night, it has to be resolved now. And but the next day, it's not like there's going to be a permanent housing situation in place, probably. That's going to take time. So is even saying, okay, but just for one night, is that realistic? Well, and what's the benefit to an extent of one night over no nights in some ways? What else do you have? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and she's got a drug problem as well. So yeah, it's whether or not that's a whole new element as well. But particularly with the housemates as well, and it's interesting. I was chatting to someone earlier today who was involved in the situation, who was one of the housemates, and I said to her, did you not, because I said I was doing this training, and I said, did you not think it was a bit strange? And I just felt really uncompassionate by saying anything. And I think that's really interesting as well, isn't it? Because I think sometimes it's really difficult for people to challenge your boundaries, and people can be very reluctant to do that because they feel like the unchristlike one, that you're giving up your bed and you're being self-sacrificing, and they're the ones saying, hang on. And obviously she was absolutely in the right to say, wait a minute, you know, we've got a tenancy agreement as well with a landlord here. So that's another element which is quite interesting, really. Anything else for Kate? Yeah. Yeah, because actually that in the same thing like with the housemate, that would then make Kate seem quite uncompassionate, wouldn't it? She's put her in a situation where it's kind of, oh, I would do it. I'm the sort of person who would do it, but I can't. But maybe she will. And then you're kind of, I have to make this decision in the next 10 seconds as well, isn't it? That's quite a challenge. But I agree. I think that's when looking, and in fact, I think I wrote here, yeah, what could she have done differently? And Penny, because I think there's an issue to be resolved there as well about one person in a ministry putting another person in the ministry in a slightly awkward situation of having to be the bad guy potentially as well and say, oh, I can't, or I shouldn't, or when it's obvious that the other person would have. So yeah, I agree. Yeah, and there's also, I think the trouble with boundaries is whenever you make a precedent of whenever you say, okay, and my boundary is that you can stay in my house and sleep on the floor at short notice, that's where my boundary is, that you're kind of creating a precedent for next time as well, aren't you, that saying this is the way our relationship is going to work now, that's okay. It's quite difficult to go back from that in some ways, isn't it? Yeah. So even the boundary that she does try to make, it's quite difficult once that person's in the room, isn't it? To then go back home, off you go, even though the situation isn't really resolved. Yeah, and I think the fact that it stays for two nights is significant. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. 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 And I think, like we were saying earlier, about wearing the name of the ministry that you're working for as well, because you're not just giving the impression of the boundaries that you as a person have, but also the impression of the ministry's boundaries. And I think that's really significant when you've got partnerships like you have with police and things as well, because you're not only carrying the name of the ministry, you're also carrying the name of the connections you've made and the people who've put trust in you as well. So it's really important to remember that, because it can feel very much, when you're in a one-to-one conversation, it can feel like, oh, this is just me and you. But there is a kind of wider kind of situation involved. Was there anything else? Are you going to say something? It's all about a bit shady when it's 17 as well, isn't it? Because you're kind of, I mean, I'm not an expert at all, but when it's between 16 and 18, you're kind of in this very vague shades, where do we stand? And I think in this particular situation as well, it was very easy to forget that Zara was only 17, because her life was not like a 17-year-old's. She was out with her mum scoring drugs. It was just quite a bizarre family situation, really. And she wasn't a standard teenager. So you could easily forget that and then later think, whoa, actually, she's really young. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's all that lack of kind of transparency and stuff, isn't it? And yeah, I can totally see that as well. Yeah. Yeah. And then you can end up in a position, can't you, where it's where you think, but it was fine with her, why is it not fine with me? And you kind of think, so lots of consequences here, really, and quite a messy situation, but quite easy to see how it happened as well. I don't know about you, but I think why did Kate overstep the boundaries in this way? From what we've said, under pressure, was also maybe trying to do the right thing. Wanted to be, have a big heart, do the right thing, be compassionate. But in so doing, opened herself up to all of these possible consequences. What were the possible consequences for Zara? Some of them have been mentioned, but any extras? Yeah, and it all goes back to that urgent sense of urgency. I have to deal with this right now. I have to rescue this person right now. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's difficult because that in some ways exposes you to a different set of dangers, doesn't it? But I think whenever you're dealing with people who feel like, where it feels like this sort of situation, there are things you can do straight away and you can make it clear to them, these are the things I'm going to do right now. I'm going to speak to my ministry leader. We're going to leave a message on this person's phone. Da, da, da. Do you know what I mean? Say, these are the things we can do tomorrow. Da, da, da. Almost to timeline it. You know, so they don't feel like I'm just saying, I'm off home, I've got something good on TV and I'll be back on Monday, but also not feeling like I can solve this all in the next hour. Yeah, it's when you're caught off guard, isn't it? If you can plan, yeah. Yeah, and I think there are definite child protection, and there were child protection issues within the family in general. And yeah, that evening as well, it was one of those Friday night things as well, which is a real pain when you kind of hit 5 o'clock Friday night and everyone stops answering their phones. And I think that adds to the sense of pressure as well. But absolutely, child protection issues as well. Yeah, it puts the whole relationship, although it's the whole aim, I think, we've gone to talk about this, about why Kate does it, in some ways is to extend the relationship, to make it a deeper relationship, to kind of say, can I help you? Like, this is, you know, let me improve your life, let me see if I can support you in this way, and this will deepen our connection and relationship with this family. But in so doing, and exposing herself and Zara to the risks, jeopardises the whole thing in the first place anyway. So it's can be quite counterproductive to take those kind of quick decisions. What could she have done differently, Aunt Penny? We talked about some of those things about calling. I know you mentioned about calling the on-duty social care team. That's definitely an option, and I think that's an important number to have in your pack as well. When you're doing having these partnerships and things. Because whether or not you wanted that person to be out of that situation at 10 o'clock that evening, it didn't need to happen in the next half hour, probably. So you could have hung on for that phone call. And I think that's really key, isn't it, to go and say, I've got to wait for that phone call. And something that we've done with befriending schemes and stuff in the past is... even particularly if you're visiting the houses of really vulnerable people, or like this one, quite volatile situations sometimes, to be signing in and out of those appointments anyway. So we had, not in this particular situation, but in another situation, we had in place a phone-in, phone-out system where our befrienders would call another befriender and say, I'm going in now, I'll call you when I'm leaving. And that's what social workers do with every home visit appointment. So it's a really easy safeguard to put into place. And then obviously after that, it's helpful to have, if you don't get that phone call within half an hour, a process of things goes into place. But some simple safeguards like that. So it should be easy to get hold of somebody while you're in that appointment. You shouldn't be left on your own, really. Yeah. And to encourage her in that as well. So, you know, to say what's to re-encourage her and say, that's brilliant that you're wanting to make a change. Let's talk more about that. Reasoning to be a longer conversation rather than the immediate solution, and looking at the bigger picture of, okay, how are we going to do this? And yeah, because it's interesting, is that verse to go out and bear fruit and fruit that lasts. And I think that's quite a helpful verse in some ways as well, isn't it? To think about this is, we want to be bearing fruit that isn't just quick and plucked. It's fruit. We need to be thinking longer term about fruit that lasts and what's our long-term plan. Oh, Zara. Zara wants... Sorry. No, that's fine. Zara wants to leave. Yeah. You've got a bit of a parental issue there, haven't you, with a 17-year-old as well, where you're thinking, oh, you're becoming quite involved. Obviously, in this situation, the parenting's quite odd anyway, in that it's become not a parental relationship. It's much more of a peer relationship. But even so, she does still have parental rights to her, and she does have parental responsibility. And I think that's important, actually, because I think with Maria, it was important to be reinforcing her role as mum. You are mum. This is your call. This is your responsibility, not ours. And it's easy to go in and try and rescue and undermine mum in the process, even if mum's quite happy being undermined. You're kind of looking to create those healthy, to help reinforce those healthy relationships where you can, and say that she is your mum, you need to check, you know, this is her call, rather than bypassing mum. Yeah. You need to strengthen each other, absolutely, yeah. And to talk about the home environment in general, family relationships. Yeah, you need to stand together. Because absolutely, mum on a methadone program, this is a family that's wanting to change but struggling. So actually teaching them to stand, helping them to stand together. I think that's a really helpful point, actually. Yeah, you're trying to, yeah, you can't solve it for everyone. Yeah. So I hope it's a helpful case study. There's kind of a lot in there to look at. And I think, yeah, to talk about, just to think, it's interesting because I think you're right where you said it's really easy to see how it happened. Yeah, and I have to say, it's particularly easy for me to see how it happened because I was Kate. All right, so that's the twist. So I know. Oh, and so it's really quite fun for me looking back at it and thinking, oh, so many bad decisions in a row. And yeah, it was quite good fun chatting to my housemate earlier today about what her impressions were of it. Sorry. Yes, you can ask the outcome. She was fine, and that's the thing, isn't it? Sometimes there were so many things that could have happened. She disappeared with some of my clothes, but no money or anything. And I'd said she could borrow my clothes because it was all so rushed. She didn't even have a change of clothes, so she ended up wearing my clothes. And then making her dinner and. And I remember thinking, I'll make her a fruit smoothie because this might be the only healthy thing she gets or something. And thinking, I was thinking very short term. Do you know what I mean? I was thinking, I've got this girl for 24 hours. I'm going to try and do the best I can, rather than thinking about the long-term solution. What plan do we need to have in place? She did stay for two nights, and it was very awkward about after one night. Me thinking, and I think that after the first night, I was just really excited that I'd done something really good. I felt really good about it. The second night, I started to feel quite uncomfortable, and think I could see she was beginning to get quite twitchy without the drugs, and she actually wasn't at home. It was completely alien environment to her as well, and. I think you're absolutely right about Maria being left at home with the two children as well, because that was in the back of my head as well. I was thinking, but I've got the 17-year-old, but the 4-year-old's there. Do you know what I mean? Like, what? This is a bit mixed up. The relationship, I think, because the boundaries in a lot of their relationships were so confused, the relationship itself wasn't jeopardized. But as the relationship went on, it was increasingly boundaryless. Like, it was difficult to walk back from that point. So although they still got on well with us and liked us and things, it was quite hard to bring it back from that point. We continued to be quite involved with the family, and I still see them actually sometimes around Eastbourne and things. And you know, they are still in quite a mixed up place really. But I hope it's helpful for you to kind of see. You're welcome. Any other questions about the outcome though? Because you're welcome to ask me anything. I don't know if Zara is. I haven't seen Zara for a long time. I know that Mum is, and it's quite sad because Mum doesn't recognise me now, and we had a very close relationship. But Mum had been a heroin addict for 30, 40 years, really. So the youngest child has now been given up for adoption, which was absolutely the right thing. It was really hard, actually, as we built up a long-term relationship with them as home visitors, and that was quite a hard thing. But in fact, this indicates a year after this even happened, actually, I got married. I remember having a nightmare about the little boy and about something happening to him. And I think that, like I said, that's when you think I have not been wise here, because I wasn't taking steps. I was trying to solve it myself rather than actually using kind of wise channels, really. But I think a really helpful experience to go through, to then think, oh, okay, to examine your boundaries in the future. I was 18, so it's 8 years ago, and I was in a student house, and I was on my gap year, working for the church. And we still have a good relationship when I see her. In fact, she's hilarious because they're very open to God in quite a weird way. So I met her I volunteered at Salvation Army a couple of years later, and she'd meet me in the line, and she just associated me with praying. So she'd literally just go, "Rachel, I'm really glad you're here. Pray for me." And we'd be like on Seaside on the main road, and her just standing there waiting to receive the Holy Spirit. It was kind of like, this is bizarre, but at least she associates me with that. So that's fine. I'm aware, I don't know how we're doing for time here. We need to finish really, but I'm just going to really, really quickly go through the 10 top tips on the back and for making boundary befriending work. And these are just off the top of my head. So first one, this isn't just for befriending. I think this is a really good tip in general for pastoral stuff. Be honest that despite your best efforts, at some point you're going to let that person down. And saying that right from the outset is a brilliant way to start, because say, my kids are going to get sick, I'm going to have a really rough day, I'm going to be grumpy, sometimes I'm going to be sharp with you. It's not because I don't love you, it's just because I've had a bad day. And I'll let you down, God will never let you down. It's a good way to start. Don't make big promises early on. Try to exceed expectations rather than the opposite. I think running in with the solutions to everything isn't the way to go, either for their dignity or realistic. Remember that boundaries can always be relaxed, but it's challenging to go the other way. And that case study hopefully indicates that. Be transparent with the person who's overseeing you. If you're unsure, just ask. Particularly with a project like this, that's just the really key one. And because you're representing the project in general. Don't be rushed into urgent decision-making unless essential. Remember that we are all broken people plus Jesus. We have all suffered from a poverty of being, and that gives us everything in common. And I think it's very easy in befriending partnerships to think, I have nothing to bring this person. We have completely different backgrounds. I'm so sheltered. There's nothing I've got. But we are all broken. We all have a story ultimately of brokenness. And that does give us stuff in common. Just on that, I'd recommend that book, When Helping Hurts, How to Alleviate Poverty Without Hurting the Poor and Yourself. I've written that on the handout, but that's a really good book, and it talks about an IMF study that looked into poverty a few years ago. And it was a really interesting study because they came back and so much of poverty was about people's perceptions and dignity and just sense of humiliation rather than about a material poverty. And I think that's a really that's a helpful way of looking at poverty as well, that it's that humiliation and lack of dignity that sometimes can be the worst thing. Okay, help people carry their own burdens, but allow them to carry their own load. So just remembering that baby carrier, really, can help people with their baggage, but we've got to carry our own load. Set goals together. So what are that, rather than you setting goals for that person, what are their aims? What do they want to get out of this, however small, big or small? And I think in some ways, the smaller the better. You might want to set little stepping stone goals, just to get that sense of achievement and overcoming things. Make it clear to them from the beginning that you are submitted to someone else in the ministry and that you're not a lone ranger. You have to follow someone else's rules. That's helpful. And I think we've said this, but number 10, aim to make yourself dispensable long-term as you help to introduce that person to a new community. Okay. I hope that's helpful today. But should we just finish? Can I just finish by praying for you? That's God, I just thank you for this room full of people who are honestly wanting to serve you. And God, I pray you would equip them, not just with all these natural things that we've talked about, that you'd equip them with your Holy Spirit as well, and gifts of discernment in conversations about where to go, what to open up, where to push, where to hang back. God, I just ask, give them that. I pray you would go with them. God, I pray this wouldn't just be something in the natural, but they'd have just, yeah, supernatural power, really, in these partnerships. And I pray you just equip the admin team, the people who are behind them, to strengthen them, encourage them, the leadership as well, to set in place wise, good boundaries, and to support their team. And Lord, just thank you for this evening. Thank you for this group of people. God, I pray you bless them. Amen. Right, should we finish there?
Thank you so much. Just got a few notices. First thing is Benza is going to run the marathon. And